Friday. It's a power panel. All right, go ahead and drop it.
Resist.
Okay, resist the urge to do that again.
Right.
Okay.
We don't sell this. I'm sorry. I think it's Banana Republic. I'm not
okay,
sure.
It's a boo. All right, shop TYT for this one. ShopTYT.com.
Shop anyway. The mall for this one.
Shop in Tampa outside the 2012 Democratic convention for this one. Was it a Republican? It was Democrats, right?
Okay. What's the difference?
I was sweating so much I had to buy this shirt. I bought it outside.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That sounds like a Cenk Uygur movie.
So I felt like Cenk Uygur that day.
All right, anyway, we got a big show for you guys, so we got to get started soon. Obviously, Michael Schur, John Arriola, Cenk Uygur, Jenks. I had an interview with Keith Ellison earlier this morning. Members caught that live, tytnetwork.com/join to become a member.
Who didn't you talk to this week?
I know, right?
How'd that go? How'd the Ellison thing?
I thought it was very, very interesting. When I asked them about how the Obama administration had smeared him for the DNC run, he didn't deny it. And I asked him if Tom Perez, if he would have picked Tom Perez as his vice chair if he had won, and he said yes.
That seemed preordained. I mean,
that meeting.
That dinner, right?
Know me saw that. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Look, we broke that. I didn't even know about that. I learned it from us, that means.
Right? That's there right. That's right. Anyway, but most importantly, he talked about the issues and what they would do in the primary. So check that out. We'll have it up on youtube.com/TYT soon. So, but now we've got a ton of new revelations on Trump and Trump Jr. Yes, there's the Russian stories. Yes, it's important. No, we don't want nuclear war with Russia. We just want to know
what
happened.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, but also revelations about the wall, about North Korea and China. Later in
trade,
very important. Later in the show, a woman goes after someone Asian and says she can do it because Trump's president now. Did that prove to be true, or did she have to pay a heavy price?
I looked into it. It turns out she can.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you just gave away the story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most people didn't see that executive order. So.
Yeah. So yeah. Lots of great stuff in the show. Okay. So let's get started, Jim. Go ahead.
Okay. We're going to start off with a little bit of assorted news, all of which I think is important and not really being talked about very much, although important in very different ways. First, on the continuing battle to destroy Obamacare, you have Ted Cruz's amendment, which would allow insurers to sell plans that don't cover essential services, aren't required to insure people with pre-existing conditions. You might wonder, what would the CBO think about the effects of that? You probably won't find out because the Senate is saying they're not going to use the CBO to score it. But don't worry, it will be analyzed by the White House. And that's interesting, and that is literally what they're going to do. So look forward to that.
By the Department of Health and Human Services too, because they're going to be telling the White House how to analyze it.
That's a good point, yes.
And Donald Trump Jr.
Yes, who is, to be fair, nonpartisan. So that's interesting. Next up, there's a bill in California right now, hasn't become law yet, but if it does become law, it would require California to use 100% renewable energy by 2045, which is, yes, a long way off, but 50% renewable energy in less than 10 years right now. So that would be, considering the size of California, how big of an economy it is, that's extremely significant. That would be a great move. It would follow Hawaii, who approved a similar bill to get to 100% renewable. They signed that back in 2015, and right now Massachusetts is also considering a 100% renewable bill, although they would take a little bit longer to get to 100%.
So the wonderful news, that's how we make progress, a little bit at a time. Good to see all those states leading the way.
And exactly. Jerry Brown saying, you know, what Jerry Brown said, he said, this isn't about some cockamamie legacy. This isn't for me. I'm going to be dead. It's for you and it's damn real.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
good
for
that would be good.
Governor.
I immediately thought, I will be 75 But on my 75th birthday, I'll be like 100% renewable, baby.
Wind energy.
I can't believe Jerry Brown's dead.
Yeah. And maybe some.
Well, hopefully not, but he says he's dead.
Maybe someday a state that isn't necessarily a hard blue state will care about the future of our country and our civilization will do the same. And finally, President Duterte of the Philippines has reinstated 19 police officers who were taken off the force because they were involved in the premeditated murder of a Philippine mayor, Rolando Espinoza, last year. Duterte said this about reinstating them: "I will not allow these guys to go to prison, even if the National Bureau of Investigation says it was murder."
Okay, well, there you have it.
So a lot of the senators, obviously, I would imagine many of the mayors in the Philippines, concerned about the precedent that has been set, that police officers can simply murder politicians that they don't like. But that's what's going on over there right now.
And this is, of course, a leader of a country slash dictator that President Trump has said positive words about. If they have mutual admiration for one another. So that is heartwarming.
As both candidate and president, he has said.
Yes. So that's scary. Okay, let's turn to a little bit of fun. It's a Friday. We don't want to be too dark. There's going to be some serious news. We're going to have a little bit of fun for just a bit. Wednesday night, Donald Trump was on Air Force One, and there were a number of reporters there. He had an extended interview with them, and originally it was off the record, but in an about face, the White House released a partial transcript of those conversations, and in a number of different topics, it is a lot of fun, in some places very scary. We're going to break down both of those here today. First, the Air Force One comments of Donald Trump on North Korea and China. He said this: "A big thing we have with China was, if they could help us with North Korea, that would be great. They have pressures that are tough pressures, and I understand. And you know, don't forget China over the many years has been at war with Korea. You know, wars with Korea. It's not like, oh gee, you just do whatever we say. They've had numerous wars with Korea. And I had not known any of this. They have an 8,000 year culture. So when they see 1776, to them, that's like a modern building. The White House was essentially built in 1799. To us, that's really old. To them, that's like a super modern building, right? So you know, they've had tremendous conflict over many, many centuries with Korea. So it's not just like, you do this, but we're going to find out what happens." That was in response to how China could potentially help us with a nuclear armed North Korea. But we found out a lot about architecture.
Right.
So that's interesting.
And that he thinks the White House is a teardown.
Wait till somebody tells him that the British actually burned it down and we had to rebuild it later.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to be like, oh, the British, I knew it.
No, when he finds out it's newer, China's not going to have any respect for it.
Okay, so I'm actually going to defend him a little bit, believe it or not, on this. And I know that the bar is now super low. Mm-hmm. Right. So yes, he talks like a child. But there's two different issues here. One is how he talks, and two is what he's saying. So you can't fix how he talks. He's a child. He can't put together sentences. It is what it is, right? And yeah, we can have fun with that, and it's hard not to, right? But the question is, does he know what he's doing? I think that's a much more important point, and that's point number two. Now, he gets a lot of facts wrong. In a part that John didn't quote, he talked about 50 million people can come over the border of China. You know, there's only 25 million people in North Korea. Okay, so I mean, and he says things like he just discovered them, because he probably just discovered them. Like, they have an 8,000 year history. Did you know that? Yeah, we all knew that except you.
Aren't
anyway.
Some extremely strong Christian conservatives going to be annoyed by that 8,000 year history remark?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
No big deal.
Because Trump said it.
But, yeah. But they changed their entire ideology.
That's right. Exactly. Did we say 6,000? Yeah, wait, okay. 8,000 years old is how old the earth is. Settled with the Chinese. Anyway, but in the substance of it, he's talking about the issue that China would have with people crossing the border. That is true. That's very real, right? Mm-hmm. And he's talking about how they've had a long history with North Korea, South Korea, he calls it Korea, whatever that means, right? But it's true, and they've of course had conflict back and forth, and it's complicated. To us, we all already knew North Korea was incredibly complicated. I'm glad that Trump is onto it now.
Yeah.
And then he realizes that trade is the lever that you have with China, and that you have to balance out trade with how tough you want China to be with North Korea. And again, he just figured it out. It turns out you can't just tell China to do something.
Yeah.
You have to somehow get them there diplomatically, etc. They're just not going to listen to you. So even though he gets there pretty late and in some remarkable ways, he's not wrong about the substance of the issue.
On the trade, one more quote, because it's interesting. He goes on, we're not going to read like 4 or 5 paragraphs about how all the trade deals we've had with China are terrible. They're terrible. He makes good deals. We've made bad deals. He'll make good deals in the future. But then he ends with this. But the biggest strength we have are these horrendous trade deals, like with China. That's our strength, but we're going to fix them. But in terms of North Korea, our strength is trade. Well, if it's our biggest strength, do we really want to fix it at that point? I don't know. It seems weird to me. I know it's just the way he talks, but he talks like that to the reporters, and then we make fun of it, and that's all well and good. But at some point, he sits down with the leaders of these states. Does he talk like that to them?
Of course he does. Yes, there is no other way. It's not an act.
And sort of proof of that is that he didn't even know that this was off the record. The reporters thought that this entire press conference on Air Force One was off the record during that time. They learned later that it was on the record.
Yeah.
And he came back and said he was surprised that they thought it was off the record. He said that,
You know, my favorite part of that was the White House officials were like, off the record. Off the record, because he's saying crazy stuff. Later, he says even crazier stuff. So this is actually, like I said, it's not totally crazy. It just sounds funny.
Let's get into crazy then.
Okay, hold on. and then, so Trump goes back to his guys, and he's like, "All right, where's all the press stories about what I said? Because I thought it was pretty good." They're like, "You thought that was pretty good? We had that off the record." He's like, no, what are you talking about? I want to see that in the press. So they go back to the press.
Well,
they're
he's
like,
about to.
Oh, Jesus, apparently that was on the record. Okay, go ahead and print it.
Yeah, but it just speaks to the way, you know, this is how he speaks to everybody, right? I mean, off on the record, he doesn't even know, and he speaks in a certain way all the time.
Now, a lot of Americans worried about Trump's plans to build the border wall between the US and Mexico. Interestingly, he keeps talking about a solar wall where the entire wall would be covered on the top with solar panels, which sounds good, I guess. And he says, we have many people working on these plans. Many people want to put solar panels on it. And then he turned to a different issue with the wall that I don't think enough people are really concerned about, but he's thinking ahead. He said this, one of the things with the wall is you need transparency. He doesn't mean in the process of building it, he literally means it needs to be transparent. You have to be able to see through it. In other words, if you can't see through that wall, so it could be a steel wall with openings, but you have to have openings because you have to see what's on the other side of the wall. Now that may sound crazy, but give him a chance. I'll give you an example. As horrible as it sounds, when they throw the large sacks of drugs over, and if you have people on the other side of the wall, you don't see them, they hit you on the head with 60 pounds of stuff. It's over. As crazy as that sounds, you need transparency through that wall.
Oh my God, he's.
Yeah.
All right, so a couple of things are going on here. Wait, one of them is not people throwing 60 pounds of stuff over the wall. That is not one of the things that's
happening. That's so much weed. It's just a gigantic bag of
and
weed.
Like it's not going to hit the solar panels.
Exactly. No, it's going to get caught up on top of the solar panels.
Then the power is going to go out at the wall.
And yeah, I know Steve King once talked about the Mexicans with cantaloupe calves dragging the. What is with the conservatives and dragging? Like, oh, I think they put it in cars, in trucks. But anyway, so, but John, I think you're wrong. When you said solar panels on the top of the wall, I think he thinks that you could put solar panels on both sides and see through it. That's the sense of
That's crazy.
You think what?
That he thinks that you could put solar panels on both sides and see through the wall. Because he thinks it's like glass.
Well, I do think he sees a transparent window through there. I mean,
yeah, because he's talking about how it's going to be transparent. The solar is not on the top of the wall. Right. He thinks it's on both sides of the wall.
He's
so
always talking about great views, right?
Yeah, that's true. My problem with it is less about that and more about the scale, I think, because I mean, this is thousands of miles of wall, and he pictures it as being like 30 yards, where if you throw a bag over, you're probably gonna hit somebody. It's 2,000 miles stretching through desert, remote terrain, mountains.
Think about what a unbelievable coincidence that would be. It's like out of a Coen Brothers movie. That along that 2,000 mile wall, somebody happens to be throwing a 60 pound bag of weed over.
Right.
Somebody else, because it's not a transparent wall, is walking out of the side. Right. Unbeknownst to them, whoa, wah, seek
the. It's the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. And you know, what happened to the big beautiful doors? Remember that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Those that was such a centerpiece. But honestly, this all just says he had no idea and continues to have no idea about this wall. It hasn't been thought out in the least, in the slightest.
Well, he's going to get into an area where he seems to be thinking a little bit more about it.
Okay.
And there's a sort of a scaling back of the wall, but he says this. Plus, we have some wall that's already up that we're already fixing. We're taking wall that was good, but it's in very bad shape, and we're making it new. So we're actually, in the true sense, you know, there's no reason to take it down or shit. So in a true sense, we've already started the wall.
No.
Okay. On the record.
So
he thought it was on the record.
What he means there, if we could translate that, is that theoretically on some significant portions of the border, there are already fences and sort of sets of security and stuff like that. So he's talking about that being the wall, I guess. Which is both an indictment of the previous programs that spent all the money setting those up in the first place, but also shows that he is theoretically going to be scaling back some of what that wall is. It will not just be transparent aluminum with solar panels on top.
Okay, so again, they're on the side. The most important part is actually what he said next. He said, you don't need 2,000 miles of wall because you have a lot of natural barriers. You have mountains, you have some rivers that are violent and vicious. You have some areas that are so far away that you don't really have people crossing. So you don't need that, but you'll need anywhere from 700 to 900 miles. Wait a minute, that's what we were saying. You were saying we needed a 2,000 mile wall. We said, what, are you going to build a wall across the river and then across the mountains? And you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to build it. I'm going to build a 2,000 wall.
It just got taller.
It just got taller, right?
Right.
You know how much wall we have right now? And Hillary Clinton used to call it a fence and a wall and all the different language. We already have 700 miles. We have 700 miles of a fence. By the way, that fence is see-through. So what Trump
is? Thank God.
Trump bags. Okay.
He's right. You've never heard a story like that, right? Has anybody ever heard a story like that?
And the way he described it, you'd have steel. You could just pass the bags through the steel gates. But anyway, so what Trump is doing, and this is the important part, is basically redefining his wall as the one that already exists. So then he gets to go, well, I told you it was going to be 700 miles, and here's the 700 miles. I told you it was going to be transparent, and the fence is transparent. I'm done with it.
Right.
Did Mexico pay for
it? So we could call it Obama's wall.
Yeah.
That would be the worst thing you could ever hear. But in essence, he makes it up as he goes along. Mm-hmm. He made it up during the campaign, changed it a lot during the campaign, has no idea what it is now, changes it all the time now. It's an ever-evolving emperor's new clothes. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. Because he's a standard politician. And what do politicians do? They overpromise, right? They come in and they go, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to build a wall, I'm going to have Mexico pay for it. So, and that when he gets in office, they go, hey, knucklehead, that's going to cost so much money that it's totally undoable. What are you going to do, build a wall on top of a river?
But
he does then is he does a standard politician move of, John, what are you talking about? That thing that already exists. We're going to add 30 yards here and 30 yards there and put a solar panel, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to put some drones up. Oh, I built a wall. Look at this beautiful transparent wall that I built. See, I did it. I did it. I'm the best. You see that? And declare victory.
Well, the spirit of what you're saying is absolutely right. But what's unusual about him, which makes him atypical, is he's promising something that he has now proven already exists. They usually promise things that are unattainable, right?
That's true.
This is there. And he promised it to people who were dumb enough to believe that it wasn't there and he was going to put it there, who were dumb enough to believe that they wanted it and it would change our country for the better.
He should have promised extreme and persistent and increasing income inequality.
Exactly. That would have been. He
could have claimed victory on day one.
Don't give him ideas.
Okay. And by the way, he promised extreme vetting. We already have extreme vetting. We have the longest vetting process in the whole wide world. So soon he will declare victory on that. He promised a new strategy on fighting ISIS. They came up with a strategy, and it turns out it was the same one as Obama's. So It's just marketing. All it is marketing. They're terrible. They're terrible. I'm strong. I'm awesome. But the substance of it, you're not going to pay attention anyway. He figures. So
yeah. Well, let him do health care and taxes. There will be some changes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to one other section though. About a week ago, Trump sat down with Vladimir Putin, and reports coming out of that meeting of what was talked about, what wasn't talked about. There were massive disagreements, but on Putin's side, they said that Trump actually did ask about the election, and he asked multiple times, and that Putin told him he hadn't done it, and that Trump accepted that. Now, in his talks with reporters on Air Force One, Trump says that that's not a fair characterization of what actually happened, even though his description is very similar. But he does say that he asked Putin a couple of times, and Putin denied it very strongly in Trump's words. And then Trump said this, I told him, I said, look, we can't have now. He said, absolutely not twice. What do you do? End up in a fist fight with somebody, okay? And so he apparently stopped asking questions because he was worried that Vladimir Putin was going to punch him. Now, Putin does wrestle with bears, so that's a valid concern. I probably would be worried about that too. But this is Trump, the guy who said that he's going to be a vigorous defender of America and he's going to be strong in his negotiations. But he apparently backed off because he was worried about physical violence.
So right before that, he had said, what I asked him, were you involved? He said, very strongly. I said to him second time, totally different. Were you involved? Because we can't let that happen. I mean, I'm very strong on that.
Yeah.
So, but let me get this right. You're very strong on it, but after you asked him twice and he said, no, I'm not involved, you just let it go.
A weak guy would have only asked once.
Yeah. So, wait, remind me where the strength is.
Yeah.
So, your only options are not, I'm going to let it go and never do anything about it, or get into a fist fight. There is another option. It's called diplomatic consequences. So, whether it's sanctions or kicking out some of their folks like Obama did, which you brought back into the country, by the way. Thank you for bringing more Russian spies in. Anyway, so of course there are other options. Yeah. But I'm also amused, everything is strong. His Putin strongly denies it, so it must be true.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. But Trump is really strong if he had to be, but he's not because he doesn't want to get in a fist fight. But everything is strong.
Yeah.
Like, how is it strong to walk away and go, oh, okay, I guess I'm not going to do anything about it. You just diplomatically just punched us in the face, and I'm not going to do a damn thing about it because I asked you twice and you said no twice.
Right.
There is no strength in that.
Yeah. Now look, so as you alluded to, he did say, he once again said that the whole thing is just a witch hunt, didn't actually happen. He doesn't think Russia did it, but he thinks that we do need to stop it from happening again. He talks about the possibility that it was China, but number one, we can't have this happen again in our elections. And so whether you think Russia was involved, whether you totally disagree with that, and you think it's all just made up, it's a delusion, the intelligence community doesn't know what they're talking about, and maybe it was China, or maybe it wasn't China. In fact, maybe it wasn't a state at all, it was just hackers. Regardless of whoever you think did all this stuff, he says we need to make sure it doesn't happen again. What has he done? What since the election has been done to stop this from happening? Whether it was Russia or China or Czechoslovakia or some random guy in Tampa, regardless of who it was, is there any new security, any new assurance that this sort of thing won't happen in the future? I defy any Trump supporter or lover to explain what that is, because I don't know anything, even though he's implying that's the number one priority is stopping it from happening in the future.
Even though he encouraged it as a candidate. He said,
yes.
Hack away.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, though, it's not Czechoslovakia, because they don't exist.
So I apologize to our fans in Czechoslovakia. So you also have,
has the Czech Republic, they're changing their name to Czechia. Did you know?
Really?
That?
I did not know. I would caution against that.
I would too. Czech Republic sounds
tough. Czech
strong.
Sounds like a gum.
I really did just choose the name at random. I didn't expect this. But so they also talk about the sanctions. I was trying to come up with something random. Anyway, so question. But you wouldn't sign a new sanctions bill if it passes the House, talking about sanctions potentially against Russia. And he said this. Well, I'm not talking about new. I'm talking about the old sanctions. Wait, we got to get this right. Ready? I think I said it right, but just in case. We have very heavy sanctions on Russia right now. I would not and have never even thought about taking them off. Somebody said Donald Trump wants to. I don't want to take them off. I saw a report and I read a report that Trump wants to take off the sanctions. I've made a lot of money. I've made great deals. That's what I do. Why would I take sanctions off without getting anything?
So if you just left it at that, And when I read that portion of the transcript, I was like, whoa, that's really clear on the record. I'm surprised he said it. No, no, he said, I would never take off the sanctions. Right. I mean, you can't get any clearer than that. Then I
Without getting anything. No, hold.
Now, remember, before you got to the I'm the businessman, etc., he was saying, no, I would never take them off, right? And then I thought, it's Trump. It doesn't matter what he says. He'll just turn around and say the opposite 2 days later, right? But it turns out, no, later he went on to say, no, 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 we're not going to take off the sanctions until we resolve what's going on in Syria and Ukraine. But and by the way, in his mind, as he explained, Syria is already resolved.
Yeah.
They did a ceasefire. And Ukraine, well, there's not much left to resolve in Ukraine. So that means I'll never take off the sanctions, except I might take them off next week when I declare Ukraine mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Right, and blame Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration for Ukraine, which he does at every turn. It's amazing how he still thinks he's running for something, which, you know, a lot of people who are in elected office just continue doing it. But the way he frames, even now as he's going to France in this press conference, framing everything as having to do with, yeah, terrible though, that was a beauty that they did, that terrible deal that they did, and which politicians do. But he so loves campaigning that he keeps saying it as if that's going to bring success because it got him to the White House.
Yeah, he was talking about both Dakota Access and the Keystone XL pipeline. And he was bragging about how they were dead. They were never going to happen. Hillary wasn't going to do it, but I did it. I got it done. What, like, regardless of whether you think that's consistent with what Hillary Clinton would or wouldn't have done, why is she in your mind at this point? Right. She's literally hiking.
Yeah.
But he can't get past it.
By the way, on the Dakota Access pipeline, he said, I was given great credit for that one. By who?
By no one.
I assume the executives
exactly,
in charge of it.
That's exactly right.
I assume they like it.
And guys, in case you're worried that he is going to lift the sanctions, which is what Russia wanted all along. And by the way, Donald, we do have an answer for what you would have gotten in return. How are those loans with Russia going these days? I mean, we haven't heard anything because we know you took loans from Russia in order to build the golf courses. Your idiot sons admitted that. So you want to give us the state of those loans? So
it's in the tax returns. It's being audited.
Oh, yeah. It's being audited. It's still being audited. Still I bet he gets audited for 4 years.
History, yeah.
Yeah, but don't worry about any of that because in the midst of that conversation, he also said, "Let's be the smart people, not the stupid people." Oh, wait. Okay, then it's all good.
What's right. wrong with that? given you weigh, and then you choose. Smart.
That sentence seems to indicate that perhaps we're not the smart people after all.
That's a Dwight Schrute quote right there.
Are we going to talk about Don Jr. in this press conference?
We are. We're going to get to that topic a little bit later on. We got another story we want to get to before that, but we should actually probably throw to our first break.
Yes. All right. When we come back, not only Don Jr. Because it just when you thought it couldn't get worse.
But Cenk, when we talk about it, we're going to talk about what the president said to him on board Air Force One.
Yeah.
Said about
the changing story. Yes.
Right. There's two elements to that story.
But what he said, I'm just going to say it very, very quickly here. He said the president was asked. He said Don is, as many of you know, Don. He's a good boy. He's a good kid. Right. He's on a flight to France to meet with Macron. Don is a good boy. He's a good kid. Macron is 10 days younger than Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah.
never would that have happened with any other. The sort of the implied discredit he's giving to the person he's going to meet who's hosting him in France.
Well, that too, but also the implied, it's that elite, wealthy privilege, and definitely white privilege as well, of it doesn't matter what you did. He's just a kid. I mean, boys will be boys. Like, 14-year-old who happens to be black gets shot. I mean, he looked like an adult, looked like a dangerous person, but this is just a good kid. He was promising. It doesn't matter what he did. Yeah. It's weird how we judge those things in this country.
Of course.
12 years old. Okay, also when we come back.
There are 14-year-olds as well.
That's right. When we come back, an incredible story of an interview that Jordan did on the road and a shocking ending to that story. So that's a doozy. You do not want to miss that. Come right back. Cenk, Michael, and John with you guys. A couple of quick tweets for you. Sabrina Hartman writes in, Trump quotes are literal gibberish. I legit have a hard time following his train of thought sometimes.
It's true. Sometimes when I'm reading them, I feel like I'm kind of being an a-hole, but I'm just reading it. Mm-hmm. Like, he sounds crazy, but it's his words.
Yeah. No, you also give him an accent. One that he kind of has. But Yeah. So let's just keep it real.
I guess that's true.
All right, Alex writes in, sorry, I can't give Trump a pass for talking like a child. Fine, your prerogative. Control Left says, if I got hit with a 60-pound bag of weed that someone threw over a wall, it'd be the happiest day of my life.
I was sort of thinking that.
Okay, we LOL too hard on that, Control Left. You get a t-shirt. Okay, everybody else, shop TYT.com.
Okay. How big would that bag have? Someone do the calculations.
All right, Edward Masters writes in, this all makes perfect sense now. Remember, the only thing Trump was ever good at was putting his name on shit. So meaning like the wall, such as it is, already exists, and he's just going to call the Trump wall and we're done with it.
Puts a plaque on it.
Yeah. And Lucy says, well, Czechoslovakia doesn't exist anymore, so he must have done something. Hashtag strong. All right, what's next, John?
Okay, let's in part end the week with some good news. We've got a really heartwarming and I think it's safe to say pretty shocking story of generosity that came about this week. It started over the weekend in Kentucky at a Bernie Sanders rally to stop Trump Care. Those the set of rallies that we previewed on the Young Turks last week. So a lot of people went to them, obviously, and fought for access to insurance and everything. One of those people was Paula Martinez-Benje, who was at the rally with a sign. And so TYT Politics sends Jordan Sheraton to cover it. He interviews Paula. And so we're going to show you some of the clips of the interviews. But then there's a shocking twist after the interview. But here is the first section with Paula describing her situation and why this rally is so important to her.
We're part of the underinsured. We pay $600 a month for insurance. And our insurance supposedly covered 20%, or we pay 20% of our bill, so it covered 80%. That's completely ridiculous. I have a bill here that we would have had to pay $16,000 if we were uninsured. Now we have to pay like $1,400. That's completely ridiculous. We can't afford that. We have a gas bill, a light bill. You think about all the bills that you regularly pay. Now, my husband has a quote unquote decent college degree type of job. He gets paid, you know, $20 an hour, but I don't work. So how do I pay a mortgage? How do I pay all these bills?
I would disagree. You do work. You take care of this cute kid. That would be a job.
True. You know, I'm a housewife. It's not very exciting.
I would say it's probably harder than most jobs. So,
but, You catch my drift. You have people who are working starvation wages, or you make one decent paycheck, but childcare is completely ridiculous. So it's just an uphill battle all of the time.
So we're going to have some more, both in video and some of her email correspondence about her experience. And it's both, in the individual case, shocking, hard to imagine how you deal with the situation, but also obviously also true of a lot of Americans. But I want to go to what happened after that interview. TYT Politics gets reached out to by this person who is at this point anonymous, and we're going to describe why a little bit later on, who said this. I saw your 10 July 2017 interview with Paula in Covington, Kentucky. I would like to pay off her $12,000 student loan debt. I'm serious. If she sends me a photocopy of her most recent loan statement, I'll pay it in full. They reach out to Paula. Paula says, first of all, whoa, thank you so much for your kindness. I'm in tears. I am in shock that this is even happening to me. And within just 2 days, that anonymous TYT viewer paid off $12,335.49 of debt, taking a massive load off of Paula's shoulders. That's incredible.
I love you guys. So this is us sticking together, and that's an amazing story. And I don't know how many times stuff like that can happen, but it brings me to the edge of tears, and that's why we go talk to people. I mean, look, one of the issues is that if you watch the news, you don't get a sense of what's actually happening in the country. So you get a lot of talk about politics and what people are talking about in Washington, but you get a sense of that young couple in Kentucky working as hard as they can, did all the right things, but now you got a $12,000 student loan debt. She's got $9,879 debt from having her son. He was born premature at 7 months old. He was born just 3 pounds. He had to go to the neonatal intensive care. So they only paid, because her husband has a job, that's great, they only had to pay 20% of their health insurance. But that 20% is still a ton of money. Yeah. She had to spend 2 weeks in the hospital, and her son had to spend 2 months in that intensive care unit. So it turns out, you know, they had nearly $10,000 in in medical bills. And then she has a $12,000 in student loan. How are they supposed to, and then they've got a mortgage, and then they gotta take care of the kid. How are they supposed to get along? And what drives us crazy and why we cover it on the Young Turks on TYT Politics, and you can watch the whole interview on TYT Politics right now, is that, and we'll have the link below too, is that these guys, you don't see these stories. You don't see these stories, so you don't get it. Like, I feel like the people in power don't have any sense of the real struggles of Americans. And then, well, of course, for her, and by the way, what did she do? She just her husband talked her into going to the Bernie rally. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she's going to describe why in some of these quotes.
Yeah, so we'll get to that in a second. And then it turns out this amazing act of kindness from somebody watching there. You never know, take action, be part of change, stand up. You never know what can come out of it. And I can't thank that anonymous donor enough. I don't know his name, his or her name either, but it's wonderful.
Yeah.
More details.
Yeah, and really fast. So, I mean, one of the sad stories that came out a few weeks ago was that that so much of GoFundMe is related to people desperately trying to pay for their healthcare bills. But that also that you see a lot of success stories there where you do have people in many cases who don't even know the person they're helping out to get their life back on track, to financially get their head back above water. And so that is amazing. In this particular case, that this person donates so much money based on just seeing a couple minutes of a person's story is amazing. And it's been a dark time for a couple years here in America, and so it's good to see that. And from what you were saying, like, you hear a lot of politicians talk about wanting more freedom for Americans. Well, imagine if you have $12,000 in student loan debt, tons more in healthcare debt, how free are you? Like, if she wants to have another kid, does she feel free to have another kid? If she has an idea for a business and wants to start it, can she do that? Is she free to do that? Well, it's not illegal. She can technically do it. It's gonna be a little bit hard with the financial burden on her back. But after the debt was paid off, Paula had this to say. We can't read the entire thing, which is incredibly heartwarming, but we're gonna read sections. I have suffered a lot in my life. I'm okay if you share this, and I never thought that something like this could happen to me. It only solidifies in me what Nina Turner said at the People's Summit, that to paraphrase, we need to start speaking our truths and telling our stories, which she did. Speaking about why she went to the rally, she said, I came out to the Bernie rally after the insistence of my husband. I made the sign while my son took a nap. I had no idea that something would come out of it. During the protest today, I cried. I shared my story. If we don't start fighting, we could lose everything. We have to start fighting for our environment, safer gun-regulated neighborhoods. I'm tired of hearing local news stories about another black person or white person or Latino person being killed in the streets of Kentucky because of gun violence. Sure, I just want you to know then that I am angry. I'm grateful, but I'm angry that a kind stranger had to pay my health care and that so many people suffer without health care. Now I can direct my payment for that bill to her health care bills. I budget every month. Now I can use this money for my loan payment on other bills. I don't have the cloud of student loan debt plaguing me.
And TYT membership.
So she, by the way, graduated with a 4.0 GPA. So, you know, the Republicans like to put out that thing. Yeah, but bootstraps. If you just had bootstraps and you worked hard, things would magically get better. How about, like, if you worked hard and got a 4.0 GPA where you literally could not have done any better, but that doesn't make your student loan debt and your healthcare debts magically disappear.
Yeah.
Nobody says, hey, you got a 4.0? Oh, okay, we'll pay your bills, right? That's not how the country structured. But to me, the most interesting part of what she said, the most powerful part of what she said was that it's, that even though she's grateful, isn't it sad for all of us that she had to rely on the kindness of strangers? When in fact, why don't we be kind to one another? You know, that's why we set up government, so that if your neighbor has a fire, we all go put it out together. We put in money so that we have a fire department that goes and puts out the fire. That we have, that we pay for cops, we pay for roads, we pay for schools. That's us helping each other, helping our kids get a better education and have an opportunity. And by the way, John is right. If you're not plagued by student debt, then you might be able to, then you might actually be free to start your own business. I know, because that's what happened to my dad. And that was back in Turkey in the 1960s. You're telling me we can't do in America in 2017 what they did in Turkey in the 1960s, which is, you know, pay for college education. And my dad, yeah, he had no money when he came out, but he also didn't have debt, so he could start his own business. And it wound up creating hundreds of jobs. So we've got to believe in each other. And the way you do that is not just like one-off acts of kindness, although I cannot, again, cannot describe how wonderful this is. But we've got to do it on a mass scale. And that's if government is done right. That's a big if. But if it is, that's what it's there for. And that's supposed to be how we take care of each other. And
yeah.
So finally, I just want to give you a quote from the anonymous donor. I don't know if he's a he or a she, but said, "Paula and I know a little bit about each other. That's enough for me. I understand the appeal of the all too rare story that not all the milk of human kindness is curdled, but I don't want to get my 15 minutes as his poster boy. Thanks again for contacting Paula for me. I've been a long admirer of your work, and you go a long way to justifying my TYT membership." I think he's directing that to Jordan. And Paula also thanked Jordan, and she mentioned Kyle Kulinski and Jimmy Dore and all the other folks that she watches at the TYT network. And so when he or she's talking about knowing Paula a little bit, they're talking about Jordan's reporting and what they saw in the video. Mm-hmm. And that was enough. So for all you guys out there, that's why I keep telling you, we're not the Young Turks, you're the Young Turks. And so that was amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And also learn not just from the donor's experience, but from Paula's. Go out there and fight. You never know what can happen if you just make a little sign and you get out there and you show people that you care and you're gonna fight back and we're all gonna fix this together.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We should probably take our second break though.
Okay. Quick break, then we'll get to the Don Jr. stories. Young Turks, Cenk, Michael, and John with you guys. Lots of love in the comments today. So first on YouTube Super Chat, Travis Keys writes, "And just because I love TYT and have been getting my news here for about 9 years now, just about TYT." Thank you, Travis.
9 years, wow.
Yes, that's amazing. Jasmine Desi 16 writes in on Twitter, hashtag TYT live to talk to us while the show is live, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. She writes in, This story made me cry. I'm so glad we got a positive story in these dark times. And Jeremy Kohler, no relation to Dave, writes in.
Good on you, Jeremy.
spelled differently. OMFG, I'm literally in tears right now. Hashtag TYT Army really is too strong. Whoever that TYT viewer is makes me proud to be a member. Thank you, Jeremy. And obviously, one more time, thank you to the viewer who gave that money. All right, let's go to the next story.
Okay. NBC News broke the story this morning, actually, that a fifth previously unidentified person was at the controversial Donald Trump Jr. Veselnitskaya meeting at Trump Tower. NBC chose not to publish this person's name, but the Associated Press has identified him as Rinat Akhmetshin, a longtime Washington lobbyist who was accused in court filings of being a former Soviet military intelligence officer who, quote, developed a special expertise in running negative public relations campaigns, although you should understand that he denies that charge. He's also been accused in a $1 billion legal fight over a mining operation in Russia of masterminding a scheme to hack the mining company's computers and undermine their lawsuit. Now, this is a quote from Alan Futeris, who is his lawyer, who says, "He is a US citizen. He told me specifically he was not working for the Russian government, and in fact laughed when I asked him that question," which that case closed, I guess at this point.
Oh.
But you should understand that that is a statement from his lawyer. Now, this is how it was described by Akhmetshin. He says he served in the Soviet Army from 1986 to 1988 after he was drafted, but was not trained in spy tradecraft. He said his unit operated in the Baltics and was, quote, loosely part of counterintelligence. But he says he was not formally a part of Russian intelligence operations, and is certainly not these days. Now on to the meeting. So he has actually spoken out about that meeting with Donald Trump Jr. and Veselnitskaya and others. Akhmetshin said he had learned about the meeting only that day when Veselnitskaya asked him to attend. In fact, he said he went in a t-shirt and jeans because he was unprepared for the meeting. He said that Veselnitskaya brought with her a plastic folder with printed out documents that detailed what she believed was the flow of illicit funds to the DNC. Donald Trump Jr. asked the attorney at that meeting if she had all the evidence to back up her claims, including whether she could demonstrate the flow of the money. But Veselnitskaya said the Trump campaign would need to research it more. After that, Trump Jr. lost interest, according to Achmetshin, which with the work ethic we know of the Trump family, makes sense actually. They had to do the research, so they bowed out.
Right.
Now, Achmetshin said he does not know if Veselnitskaya's documents were provided by the Russian government, as has been alleged. He said he thinks she left the materials with the Trump associates. It was unclear if she handed the documents to anyone in the room or simply left them behind, he said.
So, at first, as I was reading his denials, they seemed pretty good. He was honestly, I was halfway towards convinced. The thing about the T-shirt coming in, and he's like, "No, no, no. Look, I'm willing to talk to the Senate Judiciary Committee." I got called in on that day. I don't know, and it seemed like they lost interest and they didn't care about this thing that she was trying to push. And so I'm ready to talk to AP. I'm ready to talk to anybody. And I was like, "Yeah, it sounds kind of credible." And just because he's in the Soviet military at one point doesn't mean that he's Soviet. You know, that he's KGB forever, etc. And one expert put it that way: "Oh, you never leave the Russian spies." That, how do you know that? So I wasn't that convinced. But then you find out that he mainly represents the guy that, and I'm not as good at pronouncing Russian names as you are, the female Russian lawyer,
Veselnitskaya.
Yeah, she is the lawyer for the incredibly rich Russian oligarch that he represents for lobbying interests.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You guys are both representing the same guy. The main thing that she was pushing was to get sanctions lifted off of him. So, you know, what the Obama administration did was they said certain Russians will not be allowed to, their bank accounts will be frozen. People always say that, like, "Oh, that's the obscure thing about adoption." Russia struck back by saying, "Oh, yeah, Americans won't be allowed to adopt in Russia." The adoption part's not the real part.
Yeah, it's the sanctions.
We blocked the Russian oligarchs from coming into the country and most importantly froze their bank accounts. That matters a lot. That oligarch is connected directly to Putin. And so, wait a minute, you're his lobbyist and you've been working on deals with him for a long time and you just, "Oh, the lawyer just called me in."
It's the only thing that matters, the frozen assets. That's all that it comes down to.
Oh, yes, definitely, it's the frozen assets. So then a reporter, Steve Levin, who's literally written the book on this, in 2007 he wrote a book called "The Oil and the Glory," tracks all of the Russian oligarchs and the spying and all the things that goes on. And he said, of all the people that he's ever met and written about, he said, "I know of no Russian gun for hire who managed to run his campaigns so successfully, running circles around purportedly much more seasoned Washington hands." As this guy, Achmetshin.
Yeah.
And then when I read that, I was like, "Oh, he just ran a couple circles around me."
Right.
Yeah. So
I never for one second didn't think that Trump knew about this. First of all, he's a guy who is so, first of all, he talks about, I guess it's second of all, because I already said first of all, but his family is so close, right? He was so consumed, though.
Mm-hmm. Can we read those quotes before we do the speculation about that? Because I have his direct quotes concerning that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I will say, just for the record, this is just, add this one more thing that about that meeting that Donald Trump Jr. could not be relied on to accurately recall. I had personally thought that there were no more facts about the story that theoretically could have been lies.
Right.
But he, again, forgot about this person. And there is a sixth person, apparently, or one more person who has not yet been identified, at least as of us recording this. God only knows who that will turn out to be. But
so
let's
that was
turn
in
out
addition
to, Trump.
To the translator?
Yeah, because
I believe so, yes. Okay.
There's the interpreter, and then they talk about a sixth person.
Exactly, yes. So let's turn now to Trump. So look, the father Trump has said that he didn't know about Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting up until very recently, even though lawyers for the family have apparently known about it at least since June. The father, Trump, says that he doesn't know about the meeting. On Wednesday afternoon, he told Reuters, quote, "No, that I didn't know until a couple of days ago when I heard about this. No, I didn't know about that," referring to the meeting, which seems strong and absolute until later that night when he says, "In fact, maybe it was mentioned at some point."
Yep.
So that was a quick turnaround there. Is it impossible that he got wind of this new report that's coming out or what might come out over the weekend? I don't know, but that's a quick turnaround from "I didn't know, I didn't know, I didn't know" to "maybe I knew."
Yeah, and there's no way I ever believed for a second he didn't know. I mean, I you know how close the two are, the father, the son, the stepson, I mean the son-in-law. And you know how consumed Donald Trump was with the Clintons and opposition research and all of that. There's no way that Donald Trump Jr., independent of anybody, got this information, even if he did, that he didn't go to his father and say, hey, listen, you know, we found something out here. And he was, oh, great, great, pursue it. I mean, there's no way.
And besides which, you have him on tape. So there is one part of the story that the Trumps say that I do believe, and I'll explain why in a second. But we had him on tape, we showed it a couple of days ago on the show, where Donald Trump, in between the time that Trump Jr. gets the meeting, but before he has the meeting, says, oh, we're gonna have a lot of interesting information about Hillary Clinton soon. Now he does, at that point he knows that his son has the meeting.
Right.
But doesn't know that they're gonna get nothing out of the meeting. So that's why he's like, oh, soon we'll have all this dirt on Hillary Clinton. You have him on tape. So why did he then turn around and admit, yeah, I knew about the meeting? Okay, well, one, he's an inveterate liar. So he's like, okay, I lied before. I don't care. I lie all the time.
Yeah.
So this is my 1 millionth lie in an hour. Like if it was Obama, he'd be like, wow, oh my God, just a day ago, I said I didn't know the meeting at all. If I say I know the meeting, that would be an unprecedented lie.
Right.
Such a brazen, obvious lie, right? Trump's like, whatever, it's Tuesday.
Right, right, so, there is that.
But I think that's not the only reason he did it. He could have just kept stonewalling. They must have some information, and he knows that investigators have.
They're coming. Okay, that's
what
John said.
There's like an email
said,
yeah, where yeah, he knows.
And that's pure Donald speculation, Trump obviously.
Sent to Donald Trump Jr. Right. But we do know that all of a sudden he turned around and he's like, okay, fine, I knew about the meeting.
Can I really fast? I think it's obvious based on this story, but we have to make sure that people know. We've already broken down how, regardless of whether anything came out of it, let's say Donald Trump Jr. is right, nothing came out of it. In the email, it was made clear to him that this was an attempt by the Russian government to do this, which means that when he then goes and gives speeches about how it's all a big fraud and it's disgusting to say that Russia was involved, that means he is lying at that point. Even if he got nothing, he knew that they were trying. If Trump also knew about it this entire time, Trump has said it's a made up mythical witch hunt made up by the Democratic Party, whatever, about a billion times at this point,
yeah,
which would mean that he was knowingly lying in every one of those cases. Even if nothing was attained
which
from this meeting, we know that that's a lie.
Which isn't surprising now.
Can we just dispense with that? Come on, even if you're like the most diehard Trump supporter, you know he's a pathological liar, right? Even his friends say he's a pathological liar. Like if you're pretending that that's not true, even you don't believe that.
Right. Yes. Let me very, very quickly. This is from George H.W. Bush, at the time Vice President of the United States, May 9th, 1988, a letter to his son George when he was a candidate for president. He said, George, we're about to sail into uncharted waters in terms of family scrutiny. We've all been through a lot of inquiry and microscopic probing. However, it's going to get worse, not just for our family, but for the Dukakises and the Jacksons. That was Jesse Jackson, too. Hence this letter to family. He goes through a lot of this. He says, you're going to get a lot of new friends, et cetera, et cetera. My plea is this. Please do not contact any federal agency or department on anything. A call from a Bush will get returned, but there's a great likelihood that it will be leaked, maybe deliberately misrepresented. I know it must sound very defensive, but believe me, every effort will be made to find some phone call, et cetera. He said, if this is a legitimate inquiry, call my office. It is certainly appropriate to contact your own government, but let's do it through my office so no one can accuse any of the family of trying to use influence. The difference between the Bushes, whatever you may think of them, and how they approached this sort of thing, and the Trumps, who willy-nilly lying about it to each other, yeah, I did, no, I didn't, I'm going behind the back, everybody in the family, it seems, did it. I found it remarkable when I saw that.
So that was very principled by George H.W. Bush and a great thing to do. It also shows, at least he knew his son was an idiot.
Well, I think he wrote it to everybody, but I do think he knew his son was an idiot too. Yeah. I don't think he was the
He's
first
like,
choice.
This knucklehead's anyway, yeah, gonna want another favor. He
right,
always wants a favor, just like Donald Trump Jr.
And it's not just about the Bush, it's just about the way people do it and the way they know how to do it. And you don't get embroiled in
yeah,
something
and
like
Trump,
this.
Yeah, and Trump on Air Force One, to Michael's point, said, but I think anybody would have taken that meeting. That's not, I mean, look at the letter George H.W. Right. Bush said, of course he wouldn't have taken that meeting, right? And Gore got a leaked tape of George W. Bush's debate prep and refused to watch it. They turned it into the FBI, said this is probably stolen material,
right,
and refused to watch it. Yes, there are actually decent people in the country. You're just not among them if you're in the Trump family. So, but final thing that I do believe them on, which then leads me to my theory on what's going, part of what's going on here. So when they say that they didn't get anything out of that meeting, it could be a lie, right? I mean, he's lied about every other part of the meeting. Oh, I didn't have the meeting. Oh, it was just about adoption. Okay, fine, but I didn't get information. Oh, now I didn't tell you about the fifth guy, and now here's the fifth guy. I didn't know that they were connected to the Russian government. An email that says they're connected to the Russian government. He says, I love it. So his son is also a pathological liar, etc. But why do I believe them? Because after the meeting, Trump then came out and said, hey, if you've got those 30,000 emails that Hillary deleted, Russia, send them over. He wouldn't have said that in public if they already had the emails, or they already got information from the Russians, or they already had a good enough connection to that particular Russian in the meeting that they just had. So
I disagree with that point, because I don't think he said send them over. I think he said someone should hack, someone should leak.
Right.
Which then theoretically, regardless if he was ever involved, would say, look, he called for it, but he didn't do it. It was some other group that did the hacking, did the leaking.
Yeah, that's a big difference, actually. It's true. But it's still the same, you know, thrust of what he's saying, right? Yeah. But there is a difference. Yeah.
And so the final part is a little bit of speculation on my part. So you look more into Ahmetshin, this fifth guy, and he is apparently, by the way, once masterminded a hacking scheme. Great. But he also developed a special expertise in running negative public relations campaigns. So they come in, Goldstone writes the email, that's the music publicist guy that set up the meeting in the first place, writes an email that so clearly says this is someone connected to the Russian government and they have information that could help your father. Do you want to meet? He sends it to perhaps the dumbest person in the Trump family, Donald Trump Jr., and that is a heavy title to hold, right? And Donald Trump Jr. falls right into it and goes, I love it, right? and then later, Goldstone again says, now you know that this meeting is happening with these people, right? And he goes, right, and I'll see you at 4, right? So it is possible that the Russians said to Goldstone, hey, make this meeting happen, then we put it in our back pocket in case we need it. And it's possible that they tried it with both camps.
You're talking about the blackmail.
Yeah.
Well, look, this is the guy that was apparently linked with the attempt to flip Dana Rohrabacher as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Earlier
I love
this
that
year.
The Republicans use that as an excuse. They're like, no, he met with other legislators too, like Dana Rohrabacher.
Like the unbelievably corrupt Dana Rohrabacher, the almost admittedly corrupt Dana Rohrabacher.
Yeah, and has been connected to the Russians for years.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway. So it might be that the Russians thought, this is obviously illegal. We'll get them to do something illegal. We're not going to give them the information. Whatever information we have, we'll use in whatever way we want, right? We're not just going to hand it over to them, right? And I don't know that they tried it with the Hillary campaign, but maybe they tried it with both campaigns to be able to have blackmail on them. And why? And who released it now? Who released these emails now? I don't know. So that's another really interesting question as to why now. Remember, Putin and Trump just had a meeting.
And one story that is part of this that isn't part of this, and it's part of it because people wonder about it, and it's always the postscript, is Mike Pence. He's always been away from it. He's always been arm's length, said didn't know about this, didn't know about that, didn't know about Flynn, kept in the dark. It's almost as if you watch this as political sport, they're keeping him protected from everything so that when something happens, if something happens, we have the pristine Mike Pence, untouched, untarnished, to step right in.
Right.
You're absolutely
right.
Nobody's talking about Pence, and I think it's an important thing.
Yeah, and I'm amused by pristine and Pence in the same sense. Anyway, all right, last thing. I really want to do the Trump lawyer. I know we're way over, but it's an amazing, hilarious story.
Okay. Donald Trump's personal lawyer, Mark Kasowitz, is in a particularly interesting position right now. So he is going to be in charge of the legal defense for Donald Trump on issues having to do with Russia. But it's important to note that at this point, Mark Kasowitz does not actually have a security clearance, which means that many of the documents that could theoretically be a part of this case, if a case develops, the lead lawyer won't actually even be able to look at because he doesn't have the actual ability to do so legally. Now, we can speculate about why that might be. There are reports about possible concerns about alcoholism, which of course he and his representatives disagree strongly with. But that story is out there, and apparently in response to the story, we have an email exchange involving Mark Kasowitz that really gets to the core of who he is. And again, bear in mind, this is the lead lawyer for our current president. So a stranger, a total stranger who has not been identified, emails Mark Kasowitz's law firm, and the email says this, you don't know me, I don't know you, but I believe it is in your interest and the long-term interest of your firm for you to resign from your position advising the president in regard to pending federal legal matters. No good can come from this, and in fact, your name may be turn out to be a disparaging historical footnote to the presidency of DJT. Which to me sounds like a Trump supporter, okay? He seems to be pretty deferential to the president there. But he sends that out, and Mark Kasowitz sends out a standard legal boilerplate, fuck you. But to be fair, he put the asterisk in that email, which is amazing, and I appreciate that, that's funny. Okay, so he does that, and just shortly thereafter, 12 minutes goes by, and he's like, you know what? That's not enough, I gotta reach out to this total stranger on the internet more, and says, and you don't know me, but I will know you. How dare you send me an email like that? I'm on you now. You are effing with me now. The asterisk is gone. We've pushed past it as a people. He says, let's see who you are. Watch your back, bitch. That's the president's lawyer right there.
You're a pirate, bitch.
So then the internet stranger, that's pretty funny. The internet stranger responds with, thank you for your kind reply. I may be in touch as appropriate, because he wants to keep things appropriate. And that's clearly a trolling response. Let's keep it real. He's digging at Kasowitz
there. Well, he's not just, he's saying, I may be in touch as appropriate because I'm going to report you.
Yeah, that's likely. I mean, look, that was an incredibly threatening thing. Yeah. I'm going to find you, watch your back. So Mark Kasowitz responds to that just 2 minutes later saying, call me if you want a conversation, I will have it with you. You are such a piece of shit, call me, don't be afraid, you piece of shit, which we've established earlier in the email he is. Stand up, if you don't call, you're just afraid, call me. This guy really wants to talk. And
he wants his phone number.
He wants to talk to him while he's standing here.
He does. Stand up and talk to me. I can tell you're sitting down.
What?
So 5 minutes goes by and he's still mad and he says, I'm Jewish. I presume you are too. We don't know exactly why. It's possible. I mean, it could be the name. We don't know because it doesn't seem like there's any other information present about this person.
It's got to be the name.
Stop being afraid. Call me or give me your number and I will call you. I already know where you live. I'm on you. You might as well call me. You will see me. I promise, bro.
Bro, the guy's like 70 years old.
I know, and his last name's Kasowitz. Nobody named Kasowitz has ever said bitch and bro that way.
He ended with bro.
Come on.
No, for a second,
it wasn't a bra, for the record. It was a bro.
It was a bro.
Every once in a while, I'll pause and like realize that we're in a surreal movie. Like, could you imagine if Obama's lawyer sent this note to anyone? It would have been the largest scandal in Obama's presidency by an order of magnitude.
Well, here's the difference. We never knew who Obama's lawyer was.
That's a good point.
That's right.
There wasn't as much legal jeopardy going around.
We didn't need one.
Yeah. So lots of layers to this, which I'm very amused by. First off, the first email sent by the guy, the headline was, the title was, resign now. And so I didn't read the text of the email until later. I just knew that it just said resign now. And I saw Kasowitz's reply first. And I was like, okay, it says resign now, but he must have like really lit into him in the body of the email, right? No, it turns out when you read the body of the email, resign now, please, you know, I think that you're hurting the president.
Thank you, good sir.
It's incredibly polite.
Yeah.
So he receives this incredibly polite email with like a benign resign now. My God, have you never been online? Like, you want to see vitriol. Yeah, I mean, resign now triggered you?
That resign now is nicer than anything anyone has ever said to me online.
I know, right? This is the most special snowflake I've ever seen, right? So it's like, resign now. He's like, what did you say to me? Right? He's like, what is it? He said, I'm on you. Like, what the fuck? Right.
You get the idea that I think he's standing as he's typing angrily.
Right. No, that's the second part that amuses me. He types the fuck you, and then 12 minutes later, no, I'm gonna go again. Right. He's like, you bitch! bitch. You're a bitch for leagues, not for years. So, I might be confusing it with Shia LaBeouf. Anyway, so now let's get back to the thing that's most important, which is Cassowitz did not want security clearance. First of all, if you're Donald Trump and your lawyer will not review the materials he needs to review in order to defend you, you're fired. You should be immediately fired. That's insane.
He should resign now. What did you say?
Sorry. So, okay, but Trump's an idiot, so he's like, oh, okay, you know, the prosecutors will look at the material, but my lawyer won't. And he uses lawyers like this because that's who he's used to.
But he's used this guy forever. And this guy has represented 5 out of the 6 mafia families in New York.
So hence, I'll find you, give me your phone number, I'm coming for you, bro. Right,
exactly. Bro. Right. Maybe 6 out of the 7 now.
So, but they said his excuse for not getting the security clearance, now he didn't say this, and he even denies it, was that he had problems with alcoholism. And I didn't believe that. I thought, no, look, dude, you've done some shady things in your past, and you ain't gonna go get that security clearance. Number one, you're not gonna get it. Number two, the stuff they find out about you when you go to get that security clearance is gonna get you in a world of trouble, right? That's why you didn't get the security clearance. Except, having seen these emails, I now think there's some chance he is a drunk. That's like a drunk move to do to like 3-4 times in a row.
Right.
Oh yeah, bro. Oh yeah, I'm not done with you yet, right?
Hold on, just because I think Cassowitz is already starting to email us. That's speculation, we don't know. Back off, bro.
Oh, and by the way, I'm trying to be nice to him, because if he's an alcoholic, I mean, it's not a good thing, but at least there's some excuse for this.
Well, he does have an excuse. So he did apologize to, at first through a spokesperson, eventually himself, he apologized. He said, this is one of those times when one wishes he could reverse the clock, but of course I can't. And interestingly, the day after the emails, he's typing much better. Interesting. But he also said this came at the end of a long day. It was at 10 p.m. and the day wasn't even over yet. So I guess he was tired. Okay, maybe people email things when they're tired.
There is no amount of tired where I fucking rip into a guy.
Yeah.
Right? When I'm the president's lawyer and someone sent me the most benign email I've ever seen. This is the president's
That's
lawyer.
The thing. But this is the president, though. just as shocking. Yeah. Why are you surprised that his lawyer is this guy?
Come on, guys. If you can't tell by now who Trump is, you just don't want to see it. He's been doing business with guys like this for decades and decades. And it, like Michael said, I didn't know the degree to which he had represented those families. But if you look at Trump's record of working with those families, the crime families in New York, it's amazing.
The lawyer literally represented 5 of the 6 mafia families of New York at different times.
And so it's not a coincidence that he's also representing Trump, okay? So, but you wanna keep denying who he is, that's fine. But and I'll end on a Jesse quote from Breaking Bad. To be fair to Trump, when the going gets tough, you don't need a criminal lawyer. You need a criminal lawyer.
That's a good line.
Okay, guys, we're way out of time. Everybody check out Think Tank, youtube.com/thinktank. Obviously, check out youtube.com/TYTpolitics, where that's the longer version of that interview that we showed you earlier.
And is there was any of the response of the letter that Paula wrote on there as well?
Or? Yeah, Jordan also did a live video, I believe, about this, so check that out too. So, and thank you, Michael, appreciate it. Anna and Ambria are gonna be next, and there's some amazing stories in the second hour also about the Trump cabinet, as well as the Asian American, racism against Asian Americans, which is a little stunning, but powered by what they thought they could get away with because of Trump. Okay, all right, we'll be right back.